universal form of the Lord Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, the place of appearance for the first Purusha avatar, entered into each of the separate universes, desiring to lie on the created transcendental water, Garbhodaka. Please repeat after me. After separating the different universes, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, the place of appearance for the first Purusha avatar, entered into each of the separate universes, desiring to lie on the created transcendental water, Garbhodaka. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. After analysis of the living entities and the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, the independent source of all living beings, Srila Sukadev Goswami is now presenting the prime necessity for devotional service to the Lord, which is the only occupational business of all living entities. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna and all his plenary portions and extensions of the plenary portions are non-different from one another, and thus the supreme independence is in each and every one of them. In order to prove this, Sukadev Goswami, as promised to King Parikshit, describes herein the independence of the Purusha avatar, personality of Godhead, even in the sphere of the material creation. Such activities of the Lord are also transcendental, and therefore they are also leela or pastimes of the Absolute Lord. Such pastimes of the Lord are very conducive to the hearers of the self-realization in the field of devotional service. Some may argue, why not then relish the transcendental leela of the Lord as exhibited in the land of Mathura and Vrindavan, which is sweeter than anything in this world? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur replies that the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan are meant to be relished by advanced devotees of the Lord. Neophyte devotees will misunderstand such supreme transcendental activities of the Lord, and therefore the Lord's pastimes in the material sphere related to creation, maintenance and destruction are verily relishable by the prakrita or mundane devotees of the Lord. As the yoga system, mainly based on the bodily exercises, is meant for the persons who is too much attached to the bodily conceptions of existence, similarly, the Lord's pastimes related to the creation and destruction of the material world are for those who are too materially attached. For such mundane creatures, the functions of the body and the functions of the cosmic world through physical laws is relationship with the Lord are also therefore included in the understanding of the lawmaker, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The scientists explain the material functions by so many technological terms of material law, but such blind scientists forget the lawmaker. The Srimad Bhagavatam points out the lawmaker. One should not be amazed by the mechanical arrangement of the complicated engine or dynamo, but one should praise the engineer who creates such a wonderful working machine. That is the difference between the devotee and non-devotee. Devotees are always full with praising of the Lord, who directs the physical laws. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.10, the direction of the Lord upon the material nature is described as follows. Mayadhakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetu nanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. The material nature, full of physical laws, is one of my different energies. Therefore, it is neither independent nor blind. Because I am transcendentally all-powerful, simply by my glancing over the material nature, the physical laws of the nature work so wonderfully. The actions and reactions of the physical laws work on that account. And thus, the material world is created, maintained, and annihilated again and again. Men with poor fund of knowledge, however, become astonished by studying the physical laws both within the construction of the individual body and within the cosmic manifestation. And foolishly they decry the existence of God, taking it for granted that the physical laws are independent, without any metaphysical control. The Bhagavad Gita 9.11 replies it. 9.11 replies to this foolishness in the following words. Avajananti mang mudha manushim tanum asritam param bhavam ajananto mamo bhuta maheshwaram. The foolish men, mudha, do not know the personality of Godhead in his eternal form of bliss and knowledge. The foolish man thinks of the transcendental body of the Lord as something like his own, and therefore he cannot think of the unlimited controlling power of the Lord, who is not visible in the acting of the physical laws. The Lord is, however, visible to the naked eyes of people in general when he descends himself by his own personal potency. Lord Krishna incarnated himself as he is and played very wonderful parts as the Lord himself. And the Bhagavad Gita concerns such wonderful actions and knowledge. Yet foolish men will not accept Lord Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Generally, they consider the infinitesimal and infinite features of the Lord because they themselves are unable to become either the infinitesimal or the infinite. But one should know that the infinite and infinitesimal sizes of the Lord are not his highest glories. The most wonderful manifestation of the Lord's power is exhibited when the infinite Lord becomes visible to our eyes as one of us. Yet his activities are different from those of the finite beings. Lifting a mountain at the age of 7 years and marrying 16,000 wives in the prime of his youth are some of the example of his infinite energy. But the mudhas, after seeing them or hearing about them, decry them as legendary and take the Lord as one of them. They cannot understand that Lord Shri Krishna, although in the form of a human being by his own potency, is still the Supreme Lord with full potency as the Supreme Controller. When, however, the mudhas give submissive and oral reception to the messages of the Lord, as in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the channels of disciplic succession, such mudhas also become devotees of the Lord by the grace of his pure devotees. And for this reason only, either in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of the Lord in the material world are delineated for the benefit of those men with a poor fund of knowledge. A very long purport, but it's a very wonderful purport. That's why I didn't want to stop. I have noticed when the purports are too long, we tend to break them, but then we don't really cover the next lot. So I thought I'll just read it through. Actually, I was mentioning the other day that this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam is very, very important. It actually explains, in this chapter it has been explained what Srimad Bhagavatam is dealing with. Bhagavatam actually deals with 10 aspects. The first aspect that Bhagavatam deals with, Sarga, is creation of the universe. Then second aspect the Bhagavatam deals with is Visarga, the secondary creation. The first, the universes are created, and then the secondary creation takes place through Brahma and the Prajapatis. And the third aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam that Bhagavatam deals with is called Sthanam. Sthanam means the planetary system. Then Nirodha, let me just refer to them again. The verse goes like Atra Sarga Visargascha. The first verse actually describes that. Atra Sarga Visargascha Sthanam Poshanam Utaya Mannantare Shanu Katha Nirodha Muktirashraya. Sarga means creation, Visarga means secondary creation, sub-creation, description of sub-creation, Sthanam, the planetary systems, Poshanam is protection. Whatever is created and whoever is created in this universe is maintained and protected by the Lord. Utaya, the creative impetus, Mannantara, changes of Manus, Isha Anukatha, the science of God, Nirodha, going back home, back to Godhead, Mukti, liberation, and Ashraya, the Samam Bonam, or the ultimate shelter. So in this particular verse, after describing about the living entity and the super soul, the descriptions are about the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the Purushavatar. How does the material creation take place? Srimad Bhagavatam gives the most scientific answer. Most scientific in the sense, this is the factual description. Because the Creator Himself here has described how the universe has been created. Like if somebody creates a machine, and if he himself comes and explains how he created it and how it functions, then it becomes very, very simple to understand. But if somebody takes the machine and breaks it into pieces and tries to figure out how it has been created, the chances are that he won't be able to understand. That's why an intelligent person will approach the scriptures, the descriptions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead about how He created everything, why He created everything, how He is maintaining everything, and at the end, how He is going to destroy everything. So that is an intelligent approach. The foolish approach is trying to figure out with his own endeavor how things are functioning. It's something like a blind man trying to see the sun. Or there's an analogy in the Vedic scriptures. The blind man seeing an elephant. Four blind men went to the zoo. And they were told that here is the elephant. So blind men cannot see. Therefore, they try to figure everything out by touching. Jai Shushi Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai. Jai Shushi Gornitai Ki Jai. By touching. So, one of them touched the trunk of the elephant. The leg of the elephant. And he said that the elephant just by feeling the leg of the elephant. Then another one, held on to the tusk of the elephant. Another one saw the ear of the elephant, how it was moving. He felt that it was moving back and forth. And the fourth one, held the tail of the elephant. So at the end of the day, when they got together, they got into a big argument. The first one said that elephant is like a pillar. The second one says, no, the elephant is like a radish. Like a radish, you know, who held the elephant by the tusk. The third one said, no, the elephant is like a fan. Because he held the ears of the elephant, which was moving back and forth. And the fourth one said, no, the elephant is like a broomstick. So in this way, they kept on arguing. Everyone was trying to establish that his perception was the correct one. So trying to understand the absolute reality from the material perspective is something like a bunch of blind people trying to see an elephant. But if these blind people were a little more submissive and listened to somebody who really saw the elephant, who has the eyes, and tried to understand accordingly, then he could have had a very, very clear understanding. Now, the way to understand the spiritual reality is by surrendering to someone who has seen the truth. Upodekshanti te jnanam, jnaninas tattva-darshinaha. The tattva-darshinaha. Tattva means absolute truth. And darshinaha means one who has seen. So the one who has seen the absolute truth, if we try to receive the absolute truth from him, then we can get a clear understanding of the absolute truth. In the beginning, we may not be able to see the absolute truth, but intellectually we can conceive him. And when we analyze our intellectual perceptions with our reasoning mind, then we can see that yes, it makes a lot of sense. Like we can see, Prabhupada came and he gave so many wonderful examples. Like, although we haven't seen, we with our mundane eyes or mundane intelligence, we cannot understand Krishna, but Prabhupada gives such beautiful analogy and examples to clarify the point or make us understand who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. So Prabhupada says, do you have a father? So what will be the answer? Yes. Then did your father have a father? Yes. Did he have a father? Yes. So in this way we can see that everybody has a father or a creator. But ultimately when it comes to someone, who is the father of everyone but doesn't have a father himself, that is Krishna. But even Krishna also accepts a father, that's of course another thing. So the ultimate creator, the supreme personality is God. Everybody uses the expression God. Most of the people admit that yes, I believe in God. But who is God? They answer, if they at all try to answer that question, one can see that they don't have any understanding about who God is. Like in different religions, they say that don't question about God. Like Islamism forbids one to question about God. Don't question about Allah. To question about Allah is blasphemy. Christianity so elaborately speaks about God. But who is God? No understanding. The Roman Catholics say Jesus Christ is God. And the medieval Christians, they painted God as an old man with a flowing beard, with a stick in his hand, punishing everybody. Now, since God is very old, so he must have white beard. But actually, the real understanding of God, when we receive it from a bona fide source, then you get to know that no, he is not old. Although he is the Adyang Purana Purusham, although he is the original oldest personality, the primeval lord, primeval personality, but his form is eternally youthful. And that is God. Why should God be old? If he can't control his age, if he is subject to birth, death, old age and disease, then how can he be God? Obviously, God is not subject to all these material discrepancies. God cannot be old. He is eternally youthful. And therefore, in our form also, the form that is the closest to the Lord's form, that's the best part of our life. Isn't it? What's the best part of a man's life? His youth. So the Lord is eternally youthful. So when we approach the Vedas, we get a perfect understanding about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's why Prabhupada is saying that this is the real science. And Prabhupada actually made it very clear to everybody that one should not accept blindly. The spiritual subject matter should not be accepted blindly. If you have any question, ask. Prabhupada challenged. If you have any question, you can ask, and I have the answer. Prabhupada boldly announced, if you want to know about God, you can come to me. I can tell you who he is, what his name is, what he looks like, where he stays, what he does, and I can even give you his telephone number. So that is how boldly Srila Prabhupada admitted that if anybody is interested to know about God, he can come to him and he will get all the information. But those who do not have the information, they simply beat around the bush. They simply beat around the bush, and when they don't have the answer, when they can't give the answer, they just raise their fingers and roll their eyes and say, don't ask silly questions. But if somebody has the knowledge, and if the question is sincere, why shouldn't he give the answer? Therefore, Krishna consciousness is the scientific approach of understanding the absolute reality. This is the real science. Not what is going on in the name of science today. What is going on in the name of science is mostly cheating. Science today has become atheistic. The science doesn't want to admit the creation, the creator behind the creation. They want to analyze the creation, but they don't want to accept a creator. So that is the fallacy of modern science. Like this also can be dealt with in a common sense approach. Like everybody has a watch in his hand. Most of you have watches in your hands. Now if I ask, how did the watch appear? What will be the answer? You look at the company and say, well, mine is made by Sony, Seiko, the other one is by Timex, one is by Rado, by Rolex. So you immediately can see that there is a maker behind the watch, right? Now, if somebody comes and tells you, no one made the watch. It just appeared. It fell from the sky, or there was a big bang, and the watch was produced. Will anyone buy it? Will anyone accept this? The watch was produced out of a big bang or a primordial soup somewhere. Will, if somebody comes and tells you that I was cooking a soup and then all of a sudden this watch appeared out of that soup, will anyone believe that? Now, we don't accept that kind of explanation for a simple thing like a watch. But when it comes to the creation, which is actually maintaining such a wonderful order, and obviously it's such an intricate arrangement, then we say, no, there is no creator behind that. It all appeared just by chance. Now, is it intelligent? Is it intelligent to accept some concept like that? So if that is not intelligent, are the scientists intelligent people? And about those scientists, it has been said, mudhas, the fools. And it is actually, it is the trend of this age. We can see that this kind of mentality became prevalent only in this age. And what is this age? This is the age of Kali. And due to the influence of Kali, this kind of mentality has become prevalent. Prior to that, it was not really, their concept, their understanding was not so bad. You can see that the scientists, even 200 years ago or 300 years ago, even in the West, the scientists were not so bad. The scientists were not really atheistic. The early scientists, they didn't want to defy God. They actually accepted God. And they accepted that this is His creation. But their approach was, let us see and find out if we can figure out how it is functioning. If we could give some explanation. If we can explain how Lord's creation is functioning. That was the initial approach. For example, Newton, when he saw the apple falling, he accepted that this apple was created by God. But he simply wanted to figure out why this apple was falling down when it is separated from the tree. Why doesn't it go up? It was a very simple question in his mind, and the result was his finding out the theory of gravitational pull, theory of gravity. Now this is how they were probing into the Lord's creation and trying to find out why it is happening in that way, not in some other way. Like they were seeing that the Lord's creation is maintaining a beautiful order. He saw the order. The apple falls out of the tree onto the ground. The apple doesn't go up in the sky when it is separated from the tree. But then gradually they started to get more and more information. Then they started to apply those information to invent different things. And one of the things they invented at that time was through this scientific development or scientific findings. One of the findings were, one of the invention was clock. The clock, like it was actually an imitation of the movement of time. The time is relative to the sun's movement. It takes about 12 hours for the sun to go from eastern horizon to western horizon. And then it takes another, practically another 12 hours for him, the sun, to come up into the eastern horizon. So they depicted that, the movement of the sun in a cycle, in a clock. And then, after inventing the clock, that was actually the biggest thing they invented at that time. The biggest invention was clock. Like today, as people are relating to computer, those days it was clock. A man invented clock, and you know they have conquered the world. And of course, Switzerland was the center. And so they invented that. And then, actually, what they did is, all the scientific inventions are the depiction of the law of the nature. Whatever is happening in the nature, they actually put it into their sphere of application by depicting it in a machine. That was their, like a clock. Is the movement of the sun in relation to time, or time in relation to the movement of sun, depicted in the circular movement of two hands, minute hand and hour hand. But then they tried to analyze the creation through the invention, through their invention. They invented clock, but then they tried to analyze the creation of the Lord as a clock. They said that the creation of the Lord is like a clock. And just as you wind the clock and the clock keeps on going, similarly the Lord, this creation is like a clock, and God has winded up the spring and now it's going on. And after winding it up, the Lord has gone for a vacation. So this was the first step to get rid of God. That God now, He has nothing to do with the creation. He just created, He just, after winding up, He has gone for a vacation, and now in His vacation, He's dead. The next step was, first step was, He has gone on a vacation, and the next step was, now He's dead. God is dead. We don't need Him anymore. We can figure out everything, so there is no need for God. And then came the second phase of this total atheistic. From that came the total atheistic concept of the scientists. There is no God. Who said that God even winded up, winding the spring, He has gone for a vacation and He died in the vacation? Like actually there is no God. Everything came out of accident, by chance. And what was the chance? In the beginning, there was a primordial soup. Or, once upon a time, there was a big bang, and as a result of that, the creation came. And they call it scientists. They call it science. The worst fairy tale that has been ever told is presented in the name of science today. Therefore, Prabhupada was so emphatic about smashing those scientists. Because they are simply trying to the scientists are trying to prove that there is no God. That is their own, that's their only business. But when some scientist at some point in time accepts that there must be God, there must be a God who actually has created and set such a beautiful order in everything, then what the scientific world say? The scientific world says that he copped out. Are you familiar with the expression cop out? Cop out means like you are playing a game but then walk out of the field. You are not going to play, you backed out.
You got scared out. You got into a boxing ring, and then you see the see your opponent like a huge giant. then you decide, no, I'm not going to fight with him. So that's called copping out. So when a scientist admits that there is God, then the scientific world says that he copped out. But unfortunately, for them, many scientists today are actually seriously considering. I personally had the experience, like early this year, there was a Second World Congress organized by our Bhaktivedanta Institute, and some of the guests were Nobel laureates. One of them was Professor Charles Stowens, who is the father of laser technology, one of the biggest science physicists of today. And he frankly admitted that the modern science has come to a point when it has analyzed everything, but they can't deny one factor called consciousness. And about that, modern science doesn't have any information whatsoever. There's a thing called consciousness. Who can deny that? But science doesn't have any answer to that. And Charles Stowens, in his speech actually, he admitted that the modern science has come to this point, modern physics has come to the point of accepting consciousness. They can't really deny the existence of consciousness, but they do not have any information about consciousness. And they know, and he was telling that if they want to have informations about consciousness, they have to look eastwards, and they have to look specifically to India for that answer. And it's true, Prabhupada's books are the answer. Like, if they want to know about consciousness, Prabhupada has given a very, very clear understanding, and even a child can understand what consciousness is. And this is actually the first step to transcend the material platform and come to the spiritual reality. Consciousness is not material. My senses are material, my mind is material, my intelligence is material, but my consciousness is not material. What is consciousness? Consciousness is the spiritual energy that is emanated by the spirit soul. Like, for example, the Vedic approach is, wherever there is consciousness, you can close your eyes and say that there must be a living entity. There must be a spirit soul. Just as wherever there is light, we can close our eyes and say there must be fire. Can there be light without fire? We may not feel the thing, fire, but every source of light is fire. A spark of fire giving out light. Similarly, the spiritual spark, the living entity, gives out consciousness. So it is actually a spiritual energy emanated by the spirit soul. But that consciousness is projected onto the material nature through the mind, through the senses, and that's what we are perceiving. I am seeing something because my mind is focused through my eyes, and my consciousness is flowing through the mind. Senses cannot see. This is also very beautifully explained in one of the Upanishads. Like, trying to establish the senses, mind, intelligence, but ultimately coming to the point that self is what makes everything happen. If the self goes on a holiday, as it does at the time of death, or at the time of sleep, then senses, mind, everything just stops. So it is the self that makes everything alive. And spiritual knowledge means the information about the self and a scientific explanation of the functioning of the self and the self relationship with the Supreme Self. And those three aspects are known as Sambandha, Abhidheya and Prayojan. So Vedas have very systematically analyzed this knowledge. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question or comment? Yes.
Maharaj, is this speculation or atheistic attitude that scientists have, is it about natural evolution from the human being going to jhana or something?
Yeah, that is the difference between the Eastern approach and Western approach. The Eastern approach, when they become, even when they become atheistic, they become impersonalist. Right? But the Western approach, when they become spiritually inclined, then they become impersonalist. Like the Western approach is matter is everything. Right? That is a very gross materialistic approach. Whereas Eastern approach is more spiritually inclined. Right? So they accept there is a spiritual, I mean beyond this matter there is some energy or some factor that makes the matter function or make the matter manifest. And those who are atheistic, they say that that factor is an energy and that's it. But it is a spiritual energy. So they are the impersonalists. But in the West, those, to begin with, they start the matter is everything. Matter is everything. There is nothing called spirit. And but nowadays, when some people, I'm not talking about all the Westerners, but I'm talking about the scientific, Western scientific approach. That everything is matter, and there is nothing beyond matter. Right? And anything that is, and when they become spiritually inclined, they either become atheists, I mean either become Buddhists or they become Mayavadis. At the most they accept that there is a spiritual energy. When they become Buddhists, then the goal is that at the end of matter there is nothing. Everything is a big zero. Sunyavad, voidism. But those who are little more spiritual, they say that there is a spiritual energy that is making everything happen. But then Srila Prabhupada came and he kicked out Nirvisheshvad and Sunyavad, voidism and atheism. With his left hand he kicked out voidism, with his left kick, left foot, he kicked out voidism, and with his right foot he kicked out impersonalism. And then he established himself with his Bhaktivedanta purport. And he challenged, come. If you have anything better than my presentation, come up. Prabhupada's presentation was very simple. That okay, this is my information about God. And according to my information, Krishna is God. And do you have any better information? So if you don't, then just shut up and listen to what I'm telling you.
In one of the reports, Prabhupada said, a guru has to see Krishna face to face. How I understand this?
Did Prabhupada say guru has to see Krishna face to face? Which one is that? I have to see it. Any other question? Yes, Krishna Chandra.
You spoke about the 10 topics of human environment and you said the portion of Krishna is every living being which is created in his world, which came to his world.
Every living being?
Which is created and comes to this world is also, will be protected. So, what is the exact qualification of a human being to come under his portion of? Because we see so many another failing and from ending themselves.
The last part, what did you say?
Yes. So many are hungry or have not somehow another portion of. What is the exact qualification we have to do that this?
I see, okay. Yeah, I get it. So, poshanam aspect is protection, maintenance. So, Krishna is saying that every living entity is being maintained by him, being protected by him. Then Krishna Chandra Prabhu's question is, then why so we see that some people are not being maintained? They are going hungry. Or they are suffering. What is that? Yeah. Good. I mean, now you made the point even more clear. What is the disqualification? Okay. The mother cooked a big feast. Goes hungry. Can you blame the mother? So mother has made the feast, right? It's the son has to just come to the house and have the feast. And all his hunger will be immediately satiated. But he has gone on a hunger strike against his mother. Then who can help him? So consider this point. In Krishna's creation, do you see any scarcity in any other community besides human community? Human society? Did you ever see an elephant starving? In the zoo. Okay, good. Very good point. Yeah. Now, who created the zoo? Man. Right? Only in zoo an elephant is starving. Not in the wilderness. Did you ever see a bird starving who is free in the nature? No. Did you ever see an ant starving? No. Only you see starvation in the human society. Right? Because the man has created the scarcity by stealing the quota that Krishna gave for others. Is it clear? The Krishna maintains, Krishna protects, but if somebody wants to become independent of Krishna, then what can Krishna do? He has become independent. And while he is trying to be independent, what he is doing, he is inviting all kinds of miseries for himself. Krishna is prepared to give him protection, but he wants to be independent of Krishna's protection. Then who can help him? And now you consider how Krishna is protecting. what is how this earth planet is like? What is the shape of this earth planet? It's a globe, right? And we all are situated on the surface of the globe, right? And this globe is moving with a speed of, what is the speed of this earth's movement, rotatory speed of the earth? Can anybody, does anybody remember? Something like 800 miles an hour, right? Something approximately about 800 miles an hour, right? Now, can you imagine you are standing on a ball that is moving with a speed of 800 miles an hour and you are not being deflected? You put something on a ball, on the surface of the ball, and make the ball rotate. What will happen? Everything will just fly in all different directions. But how come we are not flying in all different directions? Because Krishna has made arrangement that we all are held together on the surface of the earth. Isn't it? So this is how Krishna is protecting us. Right? And not only us, I mean, there's so many, I mean, you look at the nature, you know, like so many wonderful things, you know, that indicates that Krishna is protecting. Like, when we drive to Mayapur, we see there's so many birds. Some birds are just, you know, they're flying. Often we see some bird is just flying into the car. And then it comes, you know, within 1 inch of the car, and then it changes its course and fly away. Now, who makes this bird, right at the last moment, turn away from the car? Krishna, as the super soul, is protecting in that way. A dog is lying on the street, and the car is going in full speed. The dog just gets up, and instead of walking towards the car, it walks away from the car. What makes the dog walk away from the car? So in this way, at every step, we can see how Krishna is protecting everyone. Yes.
Pastimes
of him,
And in your past devotees, there are supposed to relish description of so on. But actually, we can see that advanced devotees speak a lot about, do not only speak a lot about material creation, destruction and so on, but also the relationship. And quite often we can see the new five devotees, they have not big taste to hear about it and do not relish at all. The contrary, they like to jump to more of the pastimes aspect of Krishna. So what kind are there different classes of new five devotees? Bona fide devotees?
Very good. Yes, yes. Very good point, Arinamananda Prabhu. Actually, I also thought of addressing that point, you know. But, you know, like in course, I couldn't. And nice that you brought it up. So, Arinamananda Prabhu brought up a very, very nice point from the purport. Prabhupada is saying that the advanced devotees, or rather, the question may arise that Prabhupada is raising the question, actually, that why shouldn't the devotees be more absorbed in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes or Mathura pastimes instead of getting involved in this creation aspect? And So Prabhupada is pointing out that it is better for a neophyte devotee to be absorbed in the creation part, because he's in a neophyte platform, his approach, his outlook is more absorbed in the material side, right? He is engrossed in matter. So it will be more conducive to him to approach the absolute truth from the material side instead of jumping into something that is beyond his understanding. So as you say, like, what makes somebody not be interested in this sarga visarga or the creation aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam? Instead, why do they want to jump into the 10th canto and into Krishna's pastimes? So the answer to that will be their lack of sincerity for the spiritual process. They are not serious about their advancement. They want to have some cheap sensation, cheap excitement, right? And that's why, instead of getting into something that will be really beneficial for them, for their spiritual advancement, they're jumping onto something that they are not really qualified to enter into. And that kind of devotees are called, are identified as monkeys. Right? A monkey is very fond of jumping. He jumps from one to the other, but he doesn't have any steadiness.
So we believe that he's overestimating himself?
Maybe one thing, one reason is, he has some very high opinion. He is a student of primary school, but he thinks that he is qualified for PhD. Now, without going through the primary school education, if someone just wants to go to the university and write a thesis, what will happen? Will anybody recognize him? No. He will simply destroy his possibilities for advancement. Therefore, one, you know, like, the best, safest thing is, as you were saying, like, instead of overestimating himself, it's better to underestimate oneself. And that's what a devotee does. Although he is very advanced, he thinks that he is a neophyte. The more advanced one is, the more he feels that he is not qualified. Thank you very much, Harinamananda Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.